isolated from higher education, that we desperately wanted a community college, and the Community College Act had been passed in the 50s, late 50s, as I recall, maybe the middle 50s, and Bend was the first Central Oregon Community College to be authorized and established. And I was active in helping to do that, and on the first board, and in fact the first president of Central, or chairman of the board of Central Oregon Community College. That was a great blessing to Central Oregon because of the distance and travel. In those days they didn't have rotary plows and snow plows, tried to keep the mountain highways open in the winter, but they were more like canyons of snow in tough winters than they were the highways we now see. Mm-hmm. But that was an active time then. I loved Bend, and I participated in all kinds of activities, everything that I could. The Chamber of Commerce, the Lions Club, naturally the golf club. I was on the board of all of those organizations, president of all of them one time or another. Mm-hmm. And it was I was trying to check some dates for you. I guess it was 1958 that then Governor Hatfield, I believe it was about then, came over to make a speech to the Chamber of Commerce, and I got what they call the Bend Junior Citizen of the Year Award, and I remember then that was my first real exposure to Senator Hatfield, or then Governor Hatfield. And shortly after that, he asked me to serve on his Economic Advisory Committee, which was a really great opportunity. He established the really first effort to bring business to Oregon, and he called it the Economic Advisory Committee for the governor. Jerry Frank was the chair of that committee, and Glenn Jackson was on the committee. It was a real wonderful opportunity for me to get acquainted with those people.
Mm-hmm. What was the experience of being on the committee like?
Well, it was great because the governor would attend all the meetings, and our role was to try to stimulate economic development in Oregon. And we didn't have any money. It was pretty much a voluntary promotion, but we had a lot of the good business leaders. The governor took various trips. I went with him once to New York with 8 or 10 business people from Oregon to talk to business in New York, and meet with various people that had indicated some interest in coming to Oregon. I remember that trip with great fondness. The governor, of course, was a great speaker, and he proclaimed the magic of Oregon to them very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, around this time, I forget exactly when the, can't bring to mind myself whether the gubernatorial election that brought Hatfield to the State House was in 56 or 58, but it was one of those 2 years, I mm-hmm. think. And he was quite young. So how did you see him at that time? Did you have any reservations about his age and that position?
No, I really didn't. I was about the same age, a little bit younger. In fact, I remember when he came up to the junior citizen dinner, he was very young, only a couple of years older than I was, and but a superb governor. He'd been Secretary of State already. Mm-hmm. He'd had a political education. He was eminently qualified to be governor, and I think was highly respected in spite of his youth.
Mm-hmm. Did you know Travis Cross then? Too?
Yes, I knew him very well. Travis was his right-hand man. I still know and enjoy Travis very much. Mm-hmm. I saw him just a few days ago. Uh-huh. He's not too well right now, but he's. I know both Travis and his wife, Beverly. Mm-hmm. He was a great administrative assistant to the Governor Hatfield. Uh-huh. In fact, I think he went with us on that New York trip, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. He obviously had a key role in Hatfield's administration. In fact, I think mm-hmm. there's a story that that he and Hatfield planned Hatfield's path to mm-hmm. to the governor's mm-hmm. Position.
I think that's a fair description. I think the senator would cheerfully agree with that. I know how fond he is of Travis. In fact, I talked to him about it not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jerry Frank had a great role in the senator's career.
Yes, that's right. And you knew Jerry Frank at this time, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Well, as long as we're talking about Travis, can you tell me a little bit more about just what kind of person he is?
He was a marvelously efficient man with wonderful judgment and common sense and a great poise and personality. Everybody liked Travis. I don't remember anybody that he didn't get along with in government, which is unusual today. Not quite so unusual in those days. People were a little more friendly.
Uh-huh. And what about Jerry Frank? How did you see him at the time?
Jerry was a dynamo always. He was actually managing the Meyer and Frank stores at that time and had just opened the Salem store, as I recall, or shortly thereafter did. He brought a lot of enthusiasm to the Economic Advisory Committee. Really set a pattern for that group that still continues up to this day. I don't know whether that's when he first made his love affair with New York when he started traveling then with the governor, but he, of course, has followed the senator's career ever since then.
Yeah, that's right. Although in recent days, not in quite such close contact.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was your first contact with Hatfield. Mm-hmm. Was on this at the time of his becoming governor, and when he was on the economic, or when you were on the Economic Advisory Council.
The first contact was when he came up to Bend for the Junior Citizens Award,
right. Mm-hmm.
And then it was shortly after that that he asked me to be on the Economic Advisory Committee.
And did you continue to have dealings with him then when he was governor?
Yes, off and on. I can remember visiting with him. Of course, we would have occasional visits with him about Indian situations. I can remember him calling me about possible judicial appointments in Eastern Oregon. He was a wonderfully careful man as far as picking competent people to be judges, both as governor and as senator. He always insisted on a committee or a group of competent people to advise him as to certain number of names from which he would pick a judge. So we have a lot of respect for him in the judicial system because he never made a political appointment to a judgeship. He always had a group of select names given to him from which he would appoint a judge, which is a wonderful system because that way you guarantee that those names come from a competent larger group of people, and he was very careful to do that. We always appreciate it. He would occasionally call when an Eastern Oregon county needed a an interim district attorney, and he would call to see, well, what about so-and-so, or what about so-and-so, and he called other people, too.
Mm-hmm. Is this approach to making these appointments in contrast to other people that have been in the Oregon State House, do you think? Or?
Yes, there have been. However, I would say that since Hatfield was governor, that practice has been followed most of the time, not always. Some of the governors have simply appointed someone that they thought was competent wanted to appoint them. Not very often, fortunately.
Mm-hmm. Do you care to mention which governors you think deviated from that process?
No, I don't think it. I don't think it would be. It would be good. I know that Governor McCall Governor Straub didn't make any straight political appointments. Since then, there have been a few violations, but I don't.
But you don't want to get into the details of that.
Huh? No.
Okay. Well, this is the sort of the seeds then of your relationship with Hatfield were sown back in these early days. When he was still governor, did you ever lock horns with him?
No, I don't recall I ever did. Mm. Don't recall there was ever any occasion where I did.
Uh-huh. So even though there would obviously sometimes be issues where the right or the interests of the Indians would be pitted against the state.
I don't think it ever happened. You know, the Warm Springs Indians were such good diplomats and such good citizens that they found ways of working through things. If something couldn't be done, why, they'd find another way to go about it, you know. And also the governor, all the governors when I was there, and the attorney general when I was at Warm Springs, now Chief Judge Redden, most cooperative at working with the Warm Springs Indians.
Mm-hmm. Was your relationship with Hatfield mostly on an official basis, or would you call him a friend?
Yeah, I would call him a very close friend. We've, over the years, especially since I became judge, we've attended a lot of the same social functions. I called him the other day about coming over to the house for dinner on a short notice. Unfortunately, they had some other plans, but he said, "Be sure and keep us in mind for another time." And I've had dinner with him on a number of occasions back in Washington. Out here, we've had. I remember on the Economic Advisory Committee, I was working the point man with distant saw people from back east to move a plant to Bend, Oregon. The governor arranged dinner for a few of us. I guess Jerry Frank and the governor and his wife and the fellow representing Distant Saw and his wife and my wife and I at Waverly, so we've had a lot of occasions and many more occasions where there were more people involved, but where we were close together.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things, if you're just out for a social evening with Senator Hatfield, what kind of things? Do you talk about?
Oh, horses, education, politics. I can remember on a number of occasions discussing the Indians. He always liked to talk about that, mm-hmm. even after I was not the attorney anymore. The senator has a wonderful mind, and he really enjoys history, every subject. He's just an outstanding man, and his wife too, Antoinette. We have been to gatherings of people that were involved in the prayer breakfast. You know, he's been active in the National Prayer Breakfast, so we've been to those. We've talked a lot of religion, talked a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll undoubtedly talk more about Mark Hatfield from time to time as this interview goes on. I want to just backtrack a little bit to something you mentioned earlier, which was, well, when we talked about Vietnam, you indicated that you hadn't had any professional involvements, particularly with the turmoil that was going on at that time. But you mentioned the situation with your son. You described that conversation with him. You described some of the things he said to you at the time. Did he interpret you as being a supporter of the effort in Vietnam at that time?
Yes, he interpreted me as being a supporter of the country. In other words, if the country was in it, I don't think I would have ever. Nobody knows, but I don't think I would have ever voted to go in there in the first place the way we did. But once we were in there, I didn't believe in draft dodging. He knew that. I didn't believe in turn your back on your country because you thought maybe they'd made a mistake. We had a when he was a senior in high school. We had a Japanese foreign exchange student who was a senior for a year who roomed with him in our house. And as seniors in high school, that would have been, that would have been about 19, the middle 60s, early 63, 64, along in there. Mm-hmm. These were both two very liberal young men, my son included. they had had some liberal teachers in high school, and they had all these wonderful idealistic theories, which are great for young people to have. And I can remember the Japanese, at that time, the saying was better red than dead. Yeah, you probably never heard that, you know. Or better dead than red, excuse me.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering.
Better dead than red.
Right.
And I can remember the Japanese foreign exchange student, Hiko was his name, saying, I think you really would be better dead than red. And I said, yeah, Hiko, I think I would. You know, I don't believe that I could be very comfortable in an environment that told me everything I had to do, you know. And we used to argue about subjects like that quite a little bit. Hiko was funny. His father was the director of all transportation in southern Japan, so he was from a very wealthy family, quite spoiled. What you might very well call a sissy. He really couldn't stand any pain or suffering of any kind. I can remember him moving sprinkler pipes in the summer, and a drop of water would hit him, and you could hear him a block away scream, you know. and in those days, we used to go over to a cattle ranch at Post, Oregon, over to Aspen Valley on the weekends to ride for cattle. And I don't want to go to a post. I can't go. But he would go and stay by the fire as best he could, and it was so funny because he always swore he just hated it over there, you know. We'd make him go ride a little bit, you know, and he was a journalism student. And after he went home, he sent us this article he'd written, first major article for one of the Japanese magazines, and it was all about what a beautiful place Aspen Valley was. It told about the stars sparkling at night and the cold nights, and the you could hear the creek rippling by his little cabin door, you know, and the cowboys would go out and round up the cattle, and he wound up by saying, "My heart longs to go back to Aspen Valley."
Well, he either learned a little bit about journalistic hyperbole, or yeah, else his memories were fonder than
he learned quite a little bit about people in the United States. One of the things he learned was, he said, I never thought people worked so hard over here. You and all your friends worked long hours, hard work. I didn't think people in the United States worked so hard, you know. And he found out how enthusiastic we were for the country, too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like that was would have been a very interesting experience for your family to have the exchange student.
It was very good. The first time my wife said, "I have to go to a church meeting tonight. You boys wash the dishes," to Hiko and my son. And Hiko said, "In Japan, boys don't wash dishes. I don't wash dishes." And my wife said to him, "Hiko, you aren't in Japan. Wash the dishes." He had a tough time, but he was a good sport about it.
Well, it sounds like your son then was in terms of his age, was just right in the middle of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, he was.
War.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. But he did enlist, you said, and mm-hmm. joined the Marines, and mm-hmm. was in a medical mm-hmm. unit then. Mm-hmm. And he came out at the end of it. Did he go to Vietnam then?
No, he never got to go. He went through Quantico basic training with the Marines, and then they sent him to a naval hospital, and ultimately he became an operative technician. And he'd only been in about 2 years when Vietnam ended, and I said to and by the he had an English degree by this time, and at Oregon, but he decided he wanted to be a doctor, and I know he said to me, "I know you'll think I'm wasting an English degree to be a doctor now." And I said, "No, I think you'll be one of the few educated doctors I know, you know." And so I said, "Let me see if I can't get you out." Because when he enlisted, he really kind of thought it was for the Vietnam War, but it turned out to be a 4-year enlistment. And I said, "There's no use you staying in now that the war's over. Let me see if I can't find some way to help you get out." "No, I'm going to stay my time." So he spent 2 more years in a hospital as an operative technician, and it was a great experience for him. Ultimately, he had to go back to pre-med and med school, but he did.
Uh-huh. And then he became a doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about your wife at this time? What was
my wife
like?
was an RN, a nurse, working at St. Charles Hospital in Bend. Part-time, and off and on, worked more as the kids got older in school. Was active in the church, and very busy lady. Mm-hmm.
What about your daughter then? Was that Kathleen?
I had two daughters. Kathy was the oldest, and Rain was next. Mm-hmm. Kathy was born in 1950, and Rain in 1953. They both went through high school there in Bend. Both were active in sports, and Kathy was a powder puff football player, mm-hmm. And they were active on the farm, because in 1968 we started the Arabian Horse Farm, and got an acreage outside of town, and started breeding and showing Arabian horses. So they had both ridden and competed in 4-H with non-registered horses, and they both liked it and rode well and handled horses well, and so we wanted to give them a little more challenge, moving up another layer as we did, and that's how we got into the Arabian horse business.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like from several of the things you've said about the comings and goings of your son and your wife and your daughters, that yours was a fairly integrated family at that time in terms of your all of your various activities, that you really sort of functioned as a family unit, and that you were able to take enough time from your career to spend with your family too. Is that
well, Bend is a small town, of course, and you could go home for lunch in 5 minutes, you know. Or I worked very long hours. In fact, up until 1968, when we started the horse farm, I probably worked way too many hours and was away from the family too much. We tried to take vacations together, but about 1968, I had a problem called Raynaud's phenomena, and my hands and feet started going to sleep and turning white, and I came down to a specialist here in Portland, and he said, well, you're just fine. He said, you just keep smoking, drinking coffee, and not getting any exercise, and in about 5 years we'll take your hands and feet off. And I said, well, is that all I have to do to keep from having that happen? You don't have to tell me again twice. And so I quit, and that came at a very good time. We owned this acreage, and we decided to start becoming more active, and I, at that time then, I became, spent more time working on the farm than I had in the previous time, getting exercise. Mm-hmm. So I began to spend a little more time with the family after about 1968. Uh-huh. Up until then, from 1949 up through 1968, it was pretty hectic. And I think I did my wife and kids a little bit of a disservice during that time period, by working too many hours and traveling too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess that's sometimes what you have to do.
Yeah.
So you were able to lick that problem then?
I didn't have any more problem with it after that. That did it.
So was it correct?
I've never had any desire to smoke or drink coffee since, and I enjoy getting exercise. In recent years, I've started playing golf again. I pretty much quit playing golf. When my son graduated from high school, he and I played golf together occasionally up to then. When he quit playing, went to college, the girls didn't play, so I quit golf completely. I might play once a year, but that was about it. Mm-hmm. And started working on the farm in my spare time, and in recent years I've started playing more golf again.
I think you told me earlier that that you had won the Bend golf tournament so many years in a row that you decided to quit at least entering the competition.
My daughter told me I had to quit. She said, you're not very popular out there anymore. That was my pretty much sole recreation during those years from 49 up to about 63 or 4, And it wasn't a tough competition. It wasn't any big deal to win it. It was a friendly, wonderful club and wonderful people, but I didn't consider it any great feat, and it was time to give somebody else a chance.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to change the tape here.